This is State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. In these polarized times, many Americans know exactly what it's like to fundamentally disagree with the people you love. Author Silas House explores this concept in his latest novel. It's about an evangelical preacher whose perspective on same-sex relationships starts to shift as national opinion on the issue evolves. Only problem is, his congregation and his wife aren't going along with him. Silas House joins me now. His new book is called Southernmost. Silas, welcome to the State of Things.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Tell me more about the idea of this book.
Well, it started out with my desire to write a book about a man on the run from the law. I always wanted to write about that. And so I started out as a kidnapping. Then I had to figure out why he kidnapped his little boy. One thing led to another. And then it ends up, you know, being a book that's largely driven by something I think all of us can relate to. When I was writing the book, I think the book is more relevant now than when I was writing it. Because now I think just about everybody since the election has thought about how they love people who fundamentally disagree with them on what it means to be a good person. And I think gay people have been having those feelings for a long, long time, loving people who, you know, who they just can't agree with on what the definition of a good person is.
So, but clearly this was not any part of the book when it started, right? You talk about a kidnapping and a guy on the run,
yes.
Right? So where does this, and these ideas, of course, have been with us, and as you say, more now than ever before as families, you know, that Thanksgiving becomes much more difficult by the year. But how did that idea creep in? Why did it creep into your book, for instance?
Well, I think for one thing is when I knew that he was a preacher, I started to think about, you know, you always want to put your characters in as much trouble as possible. So one thing that I knew is I wanted him to be a preacher who was doubting his own belief. And then I thought about why that would be. And, you know, as a gay man myself, I had never really written a story about gay people in any way. I didn't want to write a novel about, I didn't want to write a coming out story. I thought it would be more interesting to write it from a straight person's point of view who has a gay family member that they love but have badly rejected, and now he regrets that terribly. So he spends about 10 years examining himself and really thinking about what he believes in. And again, I think a whole lot of Americans can relate to that, you know, of having their beliefs challenged in evolving times. I mean, this is something that has changed so much in just the last 10 or 20 years, the way Americans think about it. However, there's still this struggle against change always, you know.
Well, can I ask you to read for us?
Yes, I'll read just a little bit from the very beginning. The rain had been falling with a pounding meanness without ceasing for 2 days, and then the water rose all at once in the middle of the night, a brutal rush so fast, Ashford thought at first a dam might have broken somewhere upstream. The ground had simply become so saturated it could not hold any more water. All the creeks were conspiring down the ridges until they washed out into the Cumberland. There was no use in anyone going to bed because they all knew what was going to happen. They only had to wait. The day dawned without any sign of sun, a sky that groaned open from a black night to a dull purpling gray of morning, and Asher went out to walk the ridge and get a full eye on the situation. The news wasn't telling them anything worthwhile. He could hear the flood before he reached the top of the ridge. There he saw the massively swollen river supping at the edges of the lower fields, 10 feet above its own banks, a foamy broth climbing so steadily he could actually see its ascent. And then he knew he had to go get Zelda.
Silas House reading from his new novel, Southernmost. Going to be at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill tonight, and you can catch him at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville tomorrow. So we've talked a little bit about the theme, but maybe you can lay out the plot for us, would you?
Well, it starts out in Tennessee, just outside of Nashville, in a fictional town called Cumberland Valley. And Asher Sharp has, you know, like I said, been examining his own beliefs for the past 10 years. But his wife has not evolved on these issues at all. And so when this devastating flood hits, the same weekend that marriage equality is passed by the Supreme Court, people in his church start to connect those two things and say it's the wrath of God. As you know, some preacher always blames disasters on something like that.
Yeah.
At the same time, a gay couple who's been living quietly in his community comes to their house seeking shelter, and his wife turns them away. And so that is just too much for Asher. And he thinks, I've been thinking about this silently for 10 years. It's time for me to act and to stand up for what I believe in. And so, of course, that sets into motion all these events that eventually it's him losing custody of his little boy.
Well, he gives that homily, that yes. sermon that his congregation didn't want to hear.
Right. And, of course, it gets on the Internet. So,
<You're>
because
right,
this
right.
is a contemporary novel. And so he becomes sort of a folk hero for especially for rural gay people and for people who are just tired of all this judgment and condemnation and have people they love, you know, that they're ready to stand up for, too.
And as you say, not only does it create a rift with his congregation, but also his wife,
yes.
which is what leads to his losing custody of his child.
Right. She uses this viral video of him, you know, having this kind of fiery sermon that some people see as a nervous breakdown against him in court. And you know, and their divorce happens around the same time that Kim Davis is refusing, and lots of other county court clerks are refusing people, mm-hmm. couples, marriage licenses, and sort of a, you know, just everything's reaching a fever pitch.
Right, and this sets up another tension within the plot of what he's going to do about losing custody of his
yes.
child.
Yes, and so, of course, you know, he makes the wrong decision because he kidnaps his little boy. But it's sort of my, you know, I was thinking about how far do you go for your child? And sometimes, you know, you go so far that you break the law and you make yeah. the wrong decisions. And he realizes that right away. But again, it's always good to have your characters in trouble.
Well, it's good to have them in trouble. And also, I think, bring them up against this particular border, which is your own conscience and the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
a lot of important barriers. Right. Yeah.
You know, slavery was legal. Jim Crow
yes.
was legal. And a
yeah.
lot of people broke the law, thank mm-hmm. God. And some of those things, some of those structures. So these are some of the central moral tensions and then how you interpret the law of God, of course, ultimately becomes a question. I wonder if I can get you to read again for us.
I'd love to. This is from about halfway through the book. So for hours and hours, there was nothing but the road. They tried listening to the radio for a while, but there was only static or gospel stations. Holy roller programs, and screaming preachers. Somehow those programs always had the best reception. Asher found it hard to believe he had once been one of those hacking preachers himself. This other life didn't seem possible to him, this other world. He drove down the long finger of Florida, with nothing to keep him from thinking about what he was going to do. By the time they reached Key Largo, his back ached, his neck ached, his arms ached, even his fingers were sore from gripping the steering wheel, but he had to keep driving. The sudden thought of finally arriving in Key West and not driving anymore filled him with a stark fear. What would it be like on an island where the road simply ended? The more Asher thought about it, the more it sounded like a trap waiting to swallow them. The sky lightened in the east, a grain of the blackness way out over the ocean. They waited at stoplights, although the roads were empty. There was nothing more lonesome than an empty, dark intersection. Even the billboards seemed lonely. Crocodile crossing just ahead. See the Christ of the Deep. Glass-bottom boat ride on the Key Largo Princess. Behind this last sign, a state trooper had hidden to watch for speeders. Asher felt a cold sweat on his upper lip and his heart drummed in his chest. The air, warm, even before daylight, smelled like salt water and fish and overripe watermelons.
Silas House, reading from his new novel, Southernmost. It's going to be at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill tonight, and there's going to be in Asheville tomorrow at Malaprop's Bookstore. And, of course, we've got that information at our website, stateofthings.org. How does this story in Southernmost, or does it, relate to your own story as a father?
Well, I don't think I could have written it without being a father. I found it really hard to write about parenthood until both of my children are now in college, 20 and 22. And so when I sat down to write this, I thought, I have, you know, I know enough about parenthood, I can write this. And what I came to realize is that the defining trait of being a parent is powerlessness, not having any power at all. You know, no matter how hard you fight to protect them, eventually they go out into the great wild world and, you know, you're just unleashing them to the hounds, it feels like. And so I think that's where Asher makes this, you know, terrible decision, is because he can't stand that powerlessness. He can't stand losing his little boy. And so he just makes this quick decision to kidnap him, and that takes him to Key West.
It's the great irony of human development, isn't it? When you're a child, you think, oh, I can't wait to be a grown-up and get all that power. And yes. Then you get there, and you say, oh, my God.
I have no power.
Can't do a thing. And so, but again, it's about all of these transgressions and these borders, sometimes artificial and sometimes in some ways real. I mean, I think that passage you read so beautifully illustrates it. What do you do when you get to the edge of everything, yes, and it looks like nowhere? It must be somewhere else. I mean, this is part of our problem in getting our heads around, you know, transgender, all of the gender issues that we struggle with, because the borders had been so well and rigidly defined,
right,
in all the wrong places, that it's very hard for people to erase those boundaries that they were,
yes,
born with. And say, you know what, these things don't exist when it comes to gender and our relationship. How much of that were you able to explore from where you said? Again, you talked about the fact that for gay people, this has been an issue for a long time. How do I continue to relate to and love people who are stuck,
right,
with that way of thinking?
Yeah, well, one challenge in the book for me was there were a lot of evangelical characters, and I never wanted to make them caricatures. I always was striving to make them as complex, if not more complex, than the other people in the book. And so one thing I'm trying to do in the book is show the response to this from the wide array of responses. I was raised evangelical. My parents still go to a holiness church. And so I've seen every iteration of that, all the way from the parent who pulls a gun on their child to try to scare the gay out of them, all the way to parents like mine who, you know, have these big wide open arms full of love. And so I wanted to show how people of faith have lots of different reactions and not just one stereotypical reaction, and also how Southerners have a wide array of acceptance. That's a big scale.
Yeah, because Southerners come in for it in a way that I think is that lets the rest of the country off the hook in a
way. Exactly.
Don't you think?
Yeah, one reason that I called the book Southernmost, not only because it's set in the Southernmost Point in Key West, but also because I think the South is, I think all of America is more like the South than it wants to admit. The South is a mirror, and it's a microcosm. And so sometimes, a couple of times, people have said, so you wrote this book set in the South to show how this is in the South? And I've said, no, I set it in the South because it's standing in for America. And so to me, it's a real American story that happens to be set in the South.
Did you, you talked about having grown up seeing this spectrum of belief, you know, among people who are stereotypically a little more set in their ideas. So it was not difficult for you to open your mind, or did you? Was there a time at which you held a lot of folks in caricature and had to work through that yourself?
No, I think, you know, even as a child, I had real problems with the church that we went to. The first thing I remember noticing is that I felt it was very sexist. You know, it was very gender segregated. Women were spoken against in the pulpit, et cetera. Then I noticed some of the race issues, xenophobia, homophobia. So I always had issue with that. But at the same time, I was surrounded by really good people who individually would say, you know, I don't agree with what the preacher said about that, but they would never have defied the preacher. So all that's confusing, but also makes it more complex and makes it more interesting to explore. You know, if you can't bolt something down to a soundbite, then you have to write a novel about it. So that's what I did.
And take time on a 17-and-a-half-minute segment to fully, at least partially, or at least more fully, amplify the themes. Did you sound like somebody who's been on the journey for a long time before you began this novel? Mm-hmm. Did it take you anywhere? Did the writing of this novel open up new ideas for you, new avenues?
It helped me to really get into the minds of people who are so homophobic. You know, I had to keep thinking, what is the problem? And again, it brought me, I kept coming back to fear and, you know, fear of the unknown, sort of like you're saying, and fear of the other. So a real place of, you know, the vulnerability of these characters is in that fear. That's what I was able to examine.
We certainly have seen progress over the past few years, perhaps over the past decade. Maybe the trajectory has been in one direction, but I wonder how you feel about it. Mm-hmm. And because obviously there's also a tremendous backlash, and I wonder what your sense of the future is and where you think we're going.
Well, I guess, you know, anytime you have progress, it's three steps forward and two steps back. And I feel like, you know, that that there has been a tremendous amount of progress. I would have never imagined, even, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, that I would be able to be married in my home state. Yeah. It was so important to me to be married in Kentucky. I never thought that would happen. It happened 5 days after the Supreme Court decision. At the same time, you know, it seems like, you know, at least where I'm from in Kentucky, every time I turn around, they have some new anti-gay legislation going before the House. And it's just endless. And I mean, you all have certainly experienced that in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's just, you know, you just keep fighting towards equality.
Silas House, the author of Southernmost. Silas is going to be at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill tonight, going to be at Malaprop's Bookstore in Asheville tomorrow, and you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Silas, what a pleasure. Thank you so
much. Thank you so much, Frank. Appreciate it.
You're quite welcome, and thank you for listening to The State of Things, produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.